Every lesson in four-wheel driving, every hour spent training for Camel Trophy, finally pays off. The teams are being pushed to their limits, the discoveries to theirs. The odds for getting through are looking good.
This is true Camel Trophy stuff. Absolutely. We've had a really tough day today, doing quite a lot of driving through really tight mountain tracks. At first, the going was pretty easy, just very delicate driving, very soft-touch driving. We've come through a path now that apparently was used by the conquistadors a couple of hundred years ago or something like this, and it hasn't been used since. So through erosion and trees falling down and just the natural process, this track has been absolute hell today. We've cleared it as best we can. It's still a very testing track for the vehicles coming through. A lot of vehicles have been damaged, but it's really gratifying work. It's really getting stuck into it, and it's a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun.
Camel Trophy, an event that captured the hearts and minds of off-road enthusiasts in the 80s and 90s. Sometimes dubbed the Olympics of four-wheel driving, teams of competitors representing their own country fought the harshest, sometimes borderline ridiculous, of terrains. Mud, water, and boulders are par for the course. And while this is a competition with winners and losers, there is a code of conduct that these teams abide by, and that is, leave no man behind.
The leading team get their discovery to within inches of the finish line and leave it there, instead rushing back to help the other group dislodge their stricken discovery.
What is it about these enthusiasts that they commit themselves to go through a grueling competition, spending copious amounts of money to modify their Land Rover, only to have it get beat up, bent, and broken? In the wake of Land Rover's reintroduction of the Defender, we take a closer look at the enthusiast culture and why they are critical to the future of Land Rover's success. Welcome to Wisco Weekly and our special podcast series called Trailblazer, where we highlight individuals who are trailblazing the future of automotive. And our trailblazers for today are Land Rover enthusiasts. Stay tuned. Hey listeners, this is Dennis Wisco, your host and executive producer of Wisco Weekly. We started the show back in November 2017, and fast forward 90 episodes later, and we are thrilled to deliver automotive and mobility content to our listeners across the globe. We have had fantastic guests on the show to discuss topics ranging from dealership customer experiences to connected car technologies, to policies like universal basic mobility or congestion pricing. We are honored that you come to us and entrust in us to deliver to you valuable news and information that are important to the future of automotive and mobility. Get more insider access to the future of automotive and mobility by signing up for our email list. Go to wiscoweeklypod.com and start getting access to our car concierge consults, our professional network, and our educational resources. That's wiscoweeklypod.com, and be sure you subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this podcast. A few months ago, CNBC did a piece on Jaguar Land Rover stating how the automaker faces an uncertain future. Since August 2016, parent company Tata Motors has been experiencing a declining stock price. Yet, if there was a silver lining, it was to be found in the North American market.
But the U.S. may hold the keys for JLR's recovery. Land Rover's strongest market is in North America, where it's in the fortunate position of being a premium sports utility maker in a time where U.S. customers are hungry for SUVs.
Undoubtedly, SUVs have become the popular car of choice for most Americans, which is why the relaunch of the Defender in the American market is pivotal to JLR's success. But will they be able to recapture the hearts and minds of the enthusiast who have arguably given the Defender the laudable reputation that it has, especially since the days of the Camel Trophy?
Mm-hmm. I understand that the enthusiasts in America are just as enthusiastic as they are here. What you guys have over there that we don't is space. My name is Richard Lee Marchand, and I live in Wigan, which is a small town to the west of Manchester. And I have owned two Range Rovers. One was a Soft Dash Classic, and I've owned a Land Rover Lightweight.
Richard Marchant is our first Land Rover enthusiast. His association to the brand can be traced back to when Land Rovers were used for the British military.
My association began quite young, really. My father was in the British Army, so I was around Land Rovers as a child, as a youth. Not driving them, you understand, but just being around them, maybe being driven inside them, and just generally getting to know the brand and what they were about. They were about simplicity. They were about being soldier-proof and a go-anywhere vehicle that was pretty utilitarian. Then I joined the military for 7 years, and, you know, I used them in Germany and 3 years in Northern Ireland, where they were converted for specialist roles.
Land Rovers have indeed been the utilitarian type vehicle that can be used on the battlefield, in the rolling desert, or the marsh pits of the jungle. Their lure has been the ability for modifications to be performed.
The modifications to Defenders here is rife. Everybody that has one will do something. They will lift maybe an inch or two to put heavy duty springs underneath, put aftermarket bumpers with a winch on the front. They'll put a roll cage. They will definitely improve the interior, upgrade the stereo, Detroit lockers, different tires on, different alloys on. Aftermarket bumpers will go on very soon. I'm making my own roof rack to carry Pelly cases for off-roading. It's been bobtailed, so the back has been cut and shut, so the departure angle's far better than it was previously from factory.
Easily, Richard has poured thousands of dollars into his Land Rovers to get them up to his custom specs. A rough estimate on how much an enthusiast spends on modifying their car is 15 to 30% of the price of the car. If you buy a used Land Rover for $30,000, you can easily pour in another $4,500 to $9,000 to modify and upgrade that same vehicle. All in all, the cost of ownership for a Land Rover is still very reasonable and still caters to the everyday man. Or does it?
If you'd have asked me this 10 to 15 years ago, it would have been a fairly simplistic answer. The problem is that Land Rover as a company seem to have diversified and split the audience. You have to go back a little bit further, really. Their series 1, 2, and 3 and their Defender models as they were basically designed for the everyman. They were sold to the military worldwide. They were sold to utilitarian companies, individuals, farmers. And then they brought the Range Rover out to 1970. The idea behind the first Range Rover was a clean interior that could be hosed down, washed out for the gentleman farmer. So there were two ways of thinking about this. There was the everyday man, be it in uniform or not. And then there was the gentleman farmer who could afford a Range Rover, a far more comfortable, far more grown-up vehicle, if you will.
The gentleman farmer is defined as a landowner who farms primarily for pleasure than profit. It is easy then to associate this type of persona to somebody who would drive a Range Rover. As history has shown, the prices of new vehicles continue to rise to the point where can the everyday man still afford a Land Rover? This now gets to the crux of Land Rover's future. With rising vehicle prices and the relaunch of the Defender, can they still attract the enthusiast who is also the everyday man?
I
I think it's important for retailers and those folks to look at a couple of different data points as it relates to maybe their enthusiasts or their current buyers who might consider a new vehicle, even if they previously purchased perhaps a used car. So
that's Ryan Donnelly. He's the OEM account director for Automotive Mastermind, a predictive analytics company. Ryan is in charge of the Jaguar Land Rover account, and he is tasked to help them develop highly targeted messages and serve them to the right people at the right time.
We need, and what we are able to do for our retailers is help them understand who previously purchased their vehicles as certified pre-owns or used vehicles the first time around. And generally speaking, people tend to be creatures of habit. So we can help our retailers identify who bought used the first time. And then ultimately, through linking to the dealership's DMS, understanding what their current used car inventory is, allow them to holistically map or match those customers to a used vehicle within their inventory that may match the current bits of either model or features that the customer's currently driving on the potential next vehicle.
Enthusiasts are usually the easiest sale. Yes, they tend to engage in a battle of wits. They tend to play coy about the things they know about the car as a way to test the salesperson or service advisor. But once they've found a car, nobody will stand in their way in obtaining it. So the more helpful someone is in guiding an enthusiast to the car, the better.
One specific way that I used to coach our retailers for was to identify the service customers coming in with a behavior prediction score. So that's Mastermind's way of sort of easily identifying who's in market to buy a car, right? So we use a scale, and our retailers can ultimately say, using all the data points, this customer is likely to be in the market or soon to be in the market, identify that they're used. And maybe if this customer has a service appointment, it's coming in 3 days, right? Let's think of it through the lens of this, enthusiast, somebody who has maybe a highly modified current Land Rover, is coming in for service, and maybe we're able to leverage sort of what has been their service history, right? Have they been spending maybe more in service over the last 2 years than they were the previous 2 years? So that might make somebody more interested in our current used car inventory. And even more to the point, maybe the retailer can have a service loaner available. A lot of these customers come in, drop their vehicles off, and take a complimentary loaner at this level. So maybe we identify this customer that's coming in that could be interested in a new vehicle. Maybe the retailer can leverage that information, knowing, using our platform, they could see if they're coming in 3 days in advance. If they've never been to the dealership, through our partnership with TransUnion, I think you're familiar with, we'll let them know what their current trade lines are in that car so we can identify what payments they're used to, maybe what they put down last time, how many payments they have left. Wouldn't it be a great idea to put this new Defender in this guy's hands? Maybe it was a demo as these vehicles become more used, or maybe we just look at our used car inventory as a whole and say, based on what he's done in the past, we have a car that's nicely equipped that let's have him drive this car while we're working on his current vehicle. And maybe we're tapping into that. We mentioned this previously, that passionate side.
Ryan relates to the enthusiast culture. As a matter of fact, you can consider him one.
I am. I was fortunate enough to have a number of different dirt bikes growing up. I think that's really where it started for me. I had a small KDX 80. I had a KX 125. I went to an RM 500 from a 125. So if you're familiar with that, that thing is. And I grew up in the woods. Let's just say a 500cc motorcycle wasn't exactly the smartest thing to take into a rocky tree-lined wood area, but somehow I survived that.
Riding a 500cc bike in a woodsy area might seem crazy to some. However, to an enthusiast, the thrill of danger also means the greater the challenge. And if it weren't for the challenge of dropping the engine yourself, the challenge of your Land Rover climbing up an 85-degree hill, the challenge of winching your Rover to a tree to cross a river, if it weren't for the challenge, then an enthusiast is just a boy with a toy. But who are enthusiasts and what defines them?
I think automotive enthusiast to me is passion of a brand almost to the point of fault, right? I think that there's so much passion in terms of what their cars look like or how they perform that they're constantly competing, maybe sometimes in a fun way, mostly in a fun way, in a healthy way, with other people who are of like mind.
Having worked in the college athletic field, an enthusiast is analogous to a Southern sports fan. I remember taking a road trip through Kentucky and hearing talk radio about a sports fan chastising a head basketball coach, attacking him personally, professionally, casting ill will on him because he doesn't know how to coach. My first thought was, well, I may say the same thing about the opponent's coach. But this sports fan was actually criticizing the coach of his own alma mater. That's how diehard enthusiasts are about their brand. They are the biggest fans, and they are also the biggest critics.
Both the positive and negative aspects of anybody who is into these types of groups is that one thing is that they have the passion, right? They want the best possible thing for this particular product, and they certainly wouldn't waste or spend their time talking about it in both a positive or negative light in any way if they weren't extremely interested in the brand. So I think there's always something to be learned on either side of that story, you know. One of the things that's certainly important about enthusiasts is that enthusiasts can drive sales to the casual buyer. And by that, I mean, you know, the passionate, you know, let's call it top 1 or 2% of people within the brand. In this case, let's call it the Defender Potentials, are folks that are going to drive excitement in the brand potentially organically just by being on forums, by being out in public groups.
Enthusiasts do drive sales by being a knowledgeable source to casual buyers. Their willingness to volunteer their own time, to post comments in forums, to offer free advice to anyone considering a Land Rover over a Jeep, to share a picture of their latest modification and provide a review of it. All of this is invaluable marketing that Jaguar Land Rover receives for free. But enthusiasts can only do so much to drive sales. The other side of the equation falls into the hands of Jaguar Land Rover. What are their discussions behind closed doors?
When I joined the OEM team, it's towards the beginning of this year. So I was excited to partner with them. And what I've learned, they have a willing participation with us from a standpoint of, you know, we're concerned about potentially the number of messages or what messages their consumer base is receiving. So I think automotive retailers in general, in my humble experience with the dealers that I worked with, tend to send out a lot more than they even realize they're sending out, right? How many touch points are we giving out to the community? How many ways are we speaking to the customers? I mean, this could be, you know, recalls, service coupons, this could be new car offers, this could be introduction to new models, right? So at the end of the month, you know, what I love to hear is that Jaguar Land Rover is moving more towards a model of communicating with their current retention base.
The thoughtfulness of Jaguar Land Rover to think deeply about their customer journey is critical. They have millions and millions of Land Rover owners here in the United States alone, and many more millions of prospective Land Rover owners. Being able to understand the customer journey and derive targeted messages is more science than art these days. Understanding online behavior and combining it with location data, Jaguar Land Rover has the ability to target enthusiasts with messages where they speak the same language.
Have I really been so crazy too? To think your love was mine, serenading to sinking moons. Oh, I've been so blind.
People like me with my wife and my three daughters, out there camping, roasting marshmallows. You have sponsors that'll do cigars and guns, you know, so they have you know, that aspect. And then you have the people that cut up and just, they don't even wheel. They just drive around and say hi and talk to everybody and, you know, drink beer and be anything from Patagonia sweaters to Hawaiian print shirt. Hi, my name is David Ducey. I'm currently live in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm originally from Louisiana. Been into Land Rovers about the last 6 years. I've had my first was a 99 Disco 2. I picked it up with 69,000 miles. And I currently have my 99, I have a 2000 Disco 2. I have two 1990 Range Rover Classics and a 2002 Land Rover Discovery 2 parts vehicle and an LR3. It's an 08.
Meet David Ducey, our last Land Rover enthusiast. I met David on the Land Rover Owners North America Facebook group. Like Richard, David has been a longtime enthusiast of Land Rovers, and obviously his enthusiasm turned into an addiction as he swooped up 6 Land Rovers in 6 years. Why is it that David swooped up so many Land Rovers in such a short period of time?
The reason I started looking at Land Rovers, and I think this is fits for a lot of people, it was Camel Trophy. I mean, I remember watching that when I was a kid, when I was like 6, 7 years old on ABC Wild World of Sports would come on and you'd watch these guys do these amazing things with these vehicles. And it just really stuck with me.
Enthusiasm begets enthusiasm. And as you just heard, the days of Camel Trophy back in the 80s have the ability to influence an entire generation of future Land Rover owners. And this is why enthusiasts are the defenders of Land Rover's future. Their enthusiasm has the ability to drive sales and influence the next generation of owners. And while Land Rover enthusiasts praise their brand and praise other enthusiasts, they can also be critical of one another in their own Land Rover ways.
The days of the old solid axle V8 powered Land Rovers are gone. There's a lot of diehard people out there that really don't like it. They don't agree with it. They don't want it. You know, they're purists. They want the Defender from 20 years ago. They just want you to make it better now. And unfortunately, that's not the case. That's not what Jag Land Rover can do. They have to move forward with their vehicle designs. And I'm okay with it, honestly. And I'm super, super excited about the new Defender and its semi-electric drives. It's different. And I think different scares a lot of people.
Different does scare people, especially when the last Defender that touched U.S. soil was back 20 years ago. As we alluded to earlier, new vehicle prices only increase, and that remains true of this newly relaunched Defender. Prices start at $50,000 and can easily escalate to $90,000. To some enthusiasts, they may argue that Land Rover needs a moment of pause.
But I would like to see Land Rover pause and take a step and just pause and look at the rivals. I believe Land Rover are pushing itself up the market at the expense of the everyday man and being practical.
So how then can Land Rover still make itself appealing to the enthusiast culture? How can they capture the hearts and minds of enthusiasts, from the everyday man to the gentleman farmer?
For the enthusiast to be a future buyer, I think their experience and service is going to be key. And that's going to be, you know, do they have or deal with somebody that's knowledgeable from the service department? You know, having someone that the enthusiast trusts in the service department, right? Most enthusiasts that I worked with were people that wanted to work with the same people every time, right? So that consistency in the service department was big. Do they also then translate that knowledgeable person from the service department into a salesperson who has not just somebody who's trying to maybe meet their numbers for the month, but somebody who has a full understanding of all the features and benefits of what the newest product potentially offers to that enthusiast.
Listeners, thanks so much for tuning into this Trailblazer episode of Wisco Weekly. I want to personally thank our Trailblazer enthusiasts, Mr. Richard Marchant, Mr. David Doucet, and Mr. Ryan Donnelly for helping tell the story. And listeners, if you love this episode, please do hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening to this podcast and share it. You can follow us along on any social media channel, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And don't forget to sign up at wiscoweeklypod.com to get access to car concierge services, our professional network, and educational resources. And as we end every episode, cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salud, kampai, mabruk, tutsins, gambe, yamas, nastorovie, to the customer experience.